It is Tuesday, June 25th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. If you have Alzheimer's disease or think you may have Alzheimer's disease, Health Initiatives Research is seeking participants to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of an oral study drug that may slow the progression of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. More information is available at 871-1771.
On this edition of Ozarks, two legislators discuss the role of Planned Parenthood in Arkansas's healthcare future and upcoming examinations of the state's parole and probation process. We also hear why a possible national designation for the White River has some people concerned.
We'll also spend an afternoon at Opera in the Ozarks at Inspiration Point, where musicians, singers, and an entire community combines to create summer entertainment.
But first, an activist group opposing construction of the Keystone XL pipeline in Oklahoma stopped construction work at a pump station in Seminole, Oklahoma, about 100 miles southwest of Muskogee yesterday. Eight members of the Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance chained themselves to equipment at the work site. Three of those members were from, or are from, Fayetteville. Eric Whelan is the spokesperson for the group.
We had four people who locked their arms using metal pipe through the tread of a earth excavator in order to prevent that piece of equipment from being used. We had two other people lock themselves to each other on top of a storage facility for equipment so that that equipment couldn't be used. And then we had two other people who locked themselves to each other in front of a trailer, a work trailer, so that they could prevent work from beginning that day.
Volunteer firefighters and police reportedly responded and began to use the jaws of life to extricate the activists from the scene. But in the process, one of the activists sustained injury. At that point, the remaining protesters unlocked themselves out of concern for their own safety, something Whelan says members of the group have to keep in mind when taking protest actions.
When we go into these actions, there is an understanding that the police could use some pain compliance in order to remove you from the site. But I believe this was the first action where we had like overt threats from the police about how they are not just, you know, we might cause you harm in this process, but telling us we're going to cause you harm.
All told, 10 activists from Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and California were arrested. Whelan says the group has more resistance actions planned for later in the summer in attempts to block construction of other tar sands pipelines in Oklahoma.
Arkansas officials concerned with the Lake Maumelle watershed are continuing to struggle for access to documents regarding the integrity of the Pegasus pipeline that ruptured in Mayflower. A letter from the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration says Exxon has requested confidential treatment, meaning the documents would be sealed. Pulaski County Judge Buddy Valine says the lack of access presents problems with oversight and a community's ability to control its drinking water.
We have to have some authority to have a say. Now, understand, this pipeline was there before Lake Maumelle was there, and they, in fact, moved it to ensure that it was not under the lake itself. It still remains a serious concern, but I think we're involved now. We continue, will continue to be involved, at least to have the community's position put forward very strongly if need be.
One of the pipeline integrity documents requested is the results of an inspection conducted by Exxon only 6 weeks before the oil spill in Mayflower. The federal agency regulating the pipeline says they are analyzing Exxon's objection to the release of records. Valine says members of the Lake Maumelle governmental stakeholders are awaiting the review of Exxon's request, which is currently being granted pending review.
More trails could be on the way in Rogers if the city council approves a contract to construct four sections of Blossom Way Trail for just more than $1 million. Steve Glass, director of the city's Planning and Transportation Department, says the trail projects are aimed at making more trail connections in the city.
That was one of the reasons we started working on this project, and so it could do that. It also connects several schools and parks as well along the way. And what it has there, actually there are four or five different components. There are some pieces to this connection that we're talking about that will be constructed in conjunction with street projects as well. But this piece, it will connect all those pieces together when they're all complete. So since just one of four different projects that will eventually connect the Greenway Trail to downtown Rogers.
The roughly two-mile connection between Veterans Park and Rogers High School on Dixieland Road is only one part of the Greater Blossom Way Trail, which includes some already completed sections.
The other projects are, one is Feist Lane, which is a street project, which we haven't bid out. When that street project is bid out, there'll be a section of trail connecting as part of it. Another piece is the First Street project. We've incorporated trails into it as well. And then a third piece is the Price Lane project, which has already been built. And actually, there's another one that's already been built, and that's the part down by the high school, the Blossom Way Greenway Trail that goes from Dixieland over to 540.
The Rogers City Council meets tonight.
Yesterday, Arkansas officials released a draft of a waiver they plan to submit to the federal government to allow federal Medicaid dollars to purchase private insurance for thousands of low-income residents. With the release of the document by the State Department of Human Services, officials are seeking public input. Two meetings are scheduled for next month. The first will be July 2nd in Little Rock, and the other is July 8th in Fort Smith. Residents can also send in their comments during the next 30 days. The private option was approved as an alternative to expanding Medicaid's enrollment for hundreds of thousands of low-income residents. Governor Mike Beebe signed it into law earlier this year, but it still must receive federal approval.
The Northwest Arkansas Metropolitan Statistical Area has been ranked as one of the top areas for job growth. According to the publication New Geography, the Northwest Arkansas MSA ranks third among mid-sized cities in its list of 2013 best cities for job growth. The area's ranking improved by 18 spots since last year's list.
Razorback Transit, like most other divisions at the University of Arkansas, will not operate on Thursday, July 4th. According to Razorback Transit, normal operations will resume on Friday, July 5th. The U of A is also reminding Arkansas senior citizens they can enroll in credit courses for free on a space available basis. Seniors wanting to enroll in fall classes are encouraged to apply as soon as possible to ensure they are admitted prior to the August 25th registration period. For more information, contact the university's admissions office.
Classic summer forecast tonight, mostly clear. Lows will be around 73 for the region. Tomorrow, sunny, highs in the mid to upper 90s. Tomorrow night, mostly clear. Lows from 71 in Northwest Arkansas to mid 70s. In the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. Political controversy is not taking the summer off in Arkansas. This month, there has been a dust-up at the state capitol as some Republican members of the state legislature raised objections to Planned Parenthood participating as an eligible organization to serve as an insurance guide in the forthcoming health exchanges. This weekend, Roby Brock talked about that issue and more with State Senator David Sanders from Little Rock and State Representative Reginald Murdoch, a Democrat from Marianna, who also happens to be the vice chairman of the House Public Health Committee. The conversation took place on the TV program Capitol View, which airs on KARK-TV in Central Arkansas. During this conversation, you'll also hear the voice of David Goins, the co-host of the program.
Senator Sanders, you've had a problem with Planned Parenthood being potentially one of those. Representative Murdoch, you have defended this. What's the problem with Planned Parenthood doing this? They meet the eligibility requirements from what I've read of what the criteria is.
And if I may chime in on that first, and that's what I'm trying to honor is the process. The state has a process whereby we evaluate, you know, we make laws in the legislative session, then it goes to the state agency directors or commissioners, of head of the entities, and then they go and implement these laws. So how we procure vendors, and we were very open and honest and made sure that we opened this up in the state so that many vendors would come in for all aspects of this private option that we're trying to implement. So certainly because Planned Parenthood or whatever the organization name may be may have a political position that's not popular with a group of legislators, we should not let that preclude them from being a part of the process. I think we run the risk of legally putting us at risk if we just arbitrarily push aside an entity because it politically doesn't stand for what we stand for. Because as we know, the insurance department, Commissioner Bradford, is going to make sure that what they go out to implement will not be abortion. It's not going to be what Planned Parenthood is about.
Last word, Senator Sanders.
Well, I mean, look, obviously Planned Parenthood is a very controversial organization, and you'd have to, you know, kind of hide your head if you didn't believe that. And my problem with it all along is, why inject controversy, needless controversy, into something that didn't need to be controversial? I mean, we're talking about the issue of abortion. You look nationwide, and while Planned Parenthood doesn't offer abortion, surgical abortion in the state of Arkansas, they do clinical abortion through the dispensing of RU486 and all those things. So from my standpoint, it was just, why are we insisting on this? Can't we all be for the greater good? Can't even Planned Parenthood sort of pull back and say, you know what, we see the prize being coverage for people who've never had it before.
But they do meet the eligibility requirements.
Yeah.
Well, and my question is, how can we discriminate in that situation? I understand what you're saying about abortion. You're talking about abortion. We're not talking about abortion.
Yeah, I'm just talking about a very controversial organization, and again, injecting controversy where it need not be.
I just don't think we're injecting controversy. I think it's, as you say, they meet the qualifications and they should have the rights as any other organization.
The Democrat Gazette has broken a story started on Monday about a parolee named Daryl Dennis. He is involved in a murder, multiple charges, out on parole. Is this an Act 570 problem? Is this some sort of other legislative problem? Or is this a funding problem, Senator Sanders?
Well, neither. It's actually a parole problem. And it goes to the heart of the administration of parole in the state of Arkansas, which is administered by the Department of Community Correction. And this is a horrible case, a case where you had an individual who, gosh, he has a criminal history that goes all the way back to when George Herbert Walker Bush was in the White House. He's out in 2000, gets out in 2008, and racks up just an incredible record of felonies. And this is somebody who clearly should have been revoked. His parole should have been revoked. He should have been sent back to prison.
How did he fall through the cracks?
Well, he fell through the cracks because, you know, DCC didn't follow their own policies and procedures. The fact is, he should have not fallen through the cracks. He should have been revoked. He should have been sent back to prison, and he wasn't. And I think that's what we're going to get to the heart of. Both as the legislature will take a look at this and with our interim mm-hmm. committees, but also the administration has now taken a look at.
What's your take, Representative Murdoch?
Well, I tend to agree in principle that there was a ball dropped somewhere along the way. It's a DCC situation. You have other people involved, and I think a full-scale investigation is underway. I'm meeting with the governor. He's just open up to all the lines to checking this out to really see what happened. Certainly on the surface, it seemed like a parole situation, as Senator Sanders mentioned, but I think there's probably some other people involved that need to be held accountable as well, because obviously with that many repeat offenses, something should have happened before now, and certainly we've taken it very seriously as Senator Sanders has spoken, and we're really, really, really disappointed in what has happened. The state is, and everybody in the administration is, and we need to make sure that this does not happen again.
Clearly, there's going to be a legislative review. Your thoughts on, I guess it was Wednesday, Arkansas State Police saying they're going to do an administrative review of their own. Your thoughts of, you know, the state police basically looking at a state agency?
I think when something happens of this magnitude with this much obvious negligence or a ball being dropped somewhere, if I can use that term, then that becomes necessary. I think we have to look at every area from top to bottom and just really take a look at this. That's as uncommon for that to happen, but I think for this type of situation, I think it's warranted and I think it makes sense.
What is state police going to learn that you guys wouldn't necessarily learn?
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is when something needs to be investigated, obviously the state police is brought in. So there's two issues. One, there's the specific case involving Daryl Dennis in the murder of Forrest Abrams, but there's also sort of the overall structural operation of and function of parole in the state of Arkansas, which some of us have been talking about for a long time. I would point out that we did actually pass three good bills this session that strengthened parole, and I think we'll actually go far to begin to eliminate some of these problems. But I might add, in particular with this case in mind, the agency didn't follow its own policies and procedures. And that's a big problem. And again, unfortunately, you know, from those of us who've been following this and working on parole issues, this is not just the exception to the rule. This is, unfortunately, we've seen it repeated over and over again.
Are they not following procedure, though, because they don't have enough manpower? Are they not following procedure because they just choose not to follow the rules, the laws that are established? Is it a funding issue? Does that agency need more money?
No, so I would say this. A lot of it goes to the heart. It depends how far you want to get in the weeds here. It's on how they are measured, metrics. You know, they are measured today on revocations, how many revocations the agency is doing. That is going to change as a result of some of the changes that we made in terms of changing the definition mm-hmm. of recidivism. It isn't revocation-based, it's action-based. Is a parolee arrested? What happens then? Is he new charges brought against him? Is he reincarcerated or she? So I think we're going to, it's a structural issue. It's how they're measured. You can bring up the question of funding. I believe it's a philosophical problem. I believe it's a leadership problem. And I think there's probably some people employed today that don't need to be employed.
Representative Murdoch.
Well, and certainly I think as we get more into it, we're going to find out if all of those things are true, just as Senator Sanders present them. But there is some correlation probably between caseload, workload, and the some of this happening. Certainly there's not an excuse, we're not making an excuse, but before we just totally lay total blame on what we're going to do and cast here, we need to make sure that we continue the investigation, do a thorough investigation, and it may come to be true. Obviously, some things have happened, and they need to be taken care of, and I think we're going to discover that more fully.
Well, and you mentioned metrics. I mean, revocation is that figure that DCC talks about, the reduction.
Recidivism.
Recidivism. Like these are numbers they point to as a positive. Are those not the right numbers to be looking at? What's kind of your feel
so
there?
So the old definition, I guess, until July 1 is recidivism is revocation resulting in confinement in an ADC or DCC facility other than the technical violator program. That's the old definition. So the new definition of recidivism goes to rearrest, reconviction, and reincarceration of a parolee in a three-year period. So what we've done is taken that metric of revocation off the table. Now we're looking at all aspects of, you know, how are our parolees doing out there? We don't have a clue as to what's going on. The thing that made this case separate, and Spencer Williams at the Democrat Gazette has done a fantastic job, is we saw the internal parole documents, the CRONIS, the EOMIS documents that measure and track all the things that happen. And you saw parole officers saying, frontline parole officers saying, Daryl Dennis will not report. Right. He will not comply. He needs a parole hearing, a revocation hearing. And that was turned down. That
and it's unacceptable. And you're
absolutely unacceptable. And, you know, the question is, how many times has that happened?
Yeah. What happens next? What do you think happens after the legislature?
Well, I think after review and all the investigation is done, then we have to take action. Because as Senator Sanders has said, this cannot happen again. There's obviously some things going on inside of our DCC and some other, maybe in the courts, maybe in the prosecutor's office. There has to be some things going on that needs to be corrected. So after this investigation, I think it'll be time for action. And I think that it won't be long from now. And I think it's necessary that we do something.
Sanders, does it wait till the fiscal session?
Well, so action in this case would be administrative action potentially in terms of personnel and policy. The other aspect that we'll have to look at is, are there legislative changes that need to be made? And as Representative Murdoch pointed out, do we look beyond DCC? Do we look at the courts? Right. Do we look at all those things? And I think the answer is yes. So what exactly the changes we need, I think that's a big question. I think what's important to say is, again, what has brought this about? And I think it is sunlight being shed on internal parole documents that are currently exempt from the FOI. So nothing like a little sunshine to breathe life into a story. And it's not just a story, but it's a crisis. And we're talking about lives here, and we're talking about people. And I don't ever want to take that for granted. And we look at this as policymakers, yeah. But we also look at it as humans and fathers.
State Senator David Sanders and State Representative Reginald Murdoch talked to Roby Brock and David Goins this weekend on the political affairs program Capital View, which airs on KARK-TV in Central Arkansas. You can hear more from the conversation at the website talkbusinessarkansas.com.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas and Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
Singer-songwriter and former French First Lady Carla Bruni wanted to write a love song to her husband Nicolas Sarkozy, but she had a rhyming problem.
I wasn't going to sing Nicolas, Nicolas, you know, and I tried.
So instead, she calls him Raymond. Carla Bruni's Little French Songs today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered this afternoon, beginning at 3 on KUAF.
Some members of the Washington and Benton County Quorum Courts have expressed concern in the past week about a designation available for the White River. The debate is visible in eastern Arkansas over a federal designation of the White River as a national blue way. The federal government sees the designation as a way to partner with local and state agencies for future improvements to the White River. Opponents say they are afraid the government is overstepping its boundaries with the designation, and they fear landowners could lose their property under the designation. Jonathan Reeves from our content partner KASU in Jonesboro files this report.
The White River is one of two rivers in the nation that's been designated as a National Blue Way. The other is the Connecticut River National Blue Way, which spans across Connecticut, Vermont, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. The National Blue Way system was established on May 24, 2012, by a secretarial order by then Department of Interior Secretary Ken Salazar. The program was announced as part of the Obama administration's America's Great Outdoors program, which stresses partnerships to create conservation solutions for America's outdoors. Rivers are selected for the National Blue Way through a competitive nominating process. Keith Weaver is project leader of the Central Arkansas National Wildlife Refuge Complex with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And this national system is designed to recognize successful and long-standing efforts in efforts by partners that are working towards conservation, recreation, education, and sustainable economic activities. And these partnerships are operating in what would be considered nationally significant rivers and their watersheds.
According to Weaver, those counties that decide to be part of the designation can qualify for grants to help make future improvements to the White River. Weaver says the program is voluntary. Those who oppose the Blue Way designation see things differently. Opponents say they're concerned federal agencies, like the Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and other agencies, will use the designation to dictate what will happen to the White River and take property away from those who own land around the White River. Jeannie Burlsworth is with Secure Arkansas.
And already they're dictating how we use our land and you know, what type of crop you grow, how much of a crop you grow and sell. This has been a problem for many years. And see, one thing that this Blue Way does is it provides the nexus, and that's what people don't understand about this designation. It provides a nexus for all the rules and regulations to come together and really have a major bite of authority to implement this. We've not seen this yet. We've never been under this type of pressure before.
According to Burlsworth, the designation was made without congressional approval, and they're afraid the government is overstepping its boundaries. Keith Weaver with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service counters that by saying the designation is locally driven, and local and state governments call the shots. 13 counties in Arkansas that have the White River flow through them have already opted out of the program, and the debate on this issue continues. July 9th is the deadline for public comment to be submitted and for counties to decide whether to stay in the designation. In Jonesboro, I'm Jonathan Reeves reporting.
It is Tuesday, June 25th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor, Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I always wish y'all heard what happens before you get to hear, because they're funny people here.
Not really.
They're really funny people here.
I find you hilarious.
Yeah, well.
I find them both hilarious. But on a serious and cultural topic.
Yes.
We're going to talk about the Artisphere Festival Orchestra.
They were wonderful last night.
And if you haven't seen them, they will perform again this coming Friday at 7 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center.
It's one of these things that, boy, they get here, they get together, and then almost poof, it's over.
They cohese, if that's a word.
Yes, they do, and then they leave. Cohese and leave.
So at 7 o'clock on Friday, it's Russian masterpieces. But there are other opportunities this week to see the orchestra in less structured settings. Chamber music tonight at 7 at the Depot in Fayetteville. How fun is that?
A lot of fun.
The Nature of Strings Quintets, 7 o'clock tomorrow night at Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs. And Thursday, an evening of clarinet and friends at 7 o'clock at the Mildred B. Cooper Memorial Chapel in Bella Vista. And you can find out all about it at artistspherefestival.org.
And I will offer this up. If you're interested in the Cooper Chapel or the Thorn Crown, call sooner rather than later, because that's limited seating. And there are people who just, you know, go just because it's in the building. So be advised.
Yes. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The Endeavor Foundation announced this morning that they are going to award $400,000 in grants.
That's excellent.
Yes. It was announced this morning that they are beginning a request for proposals for the $400,000 in available grants to support Energize NWA's mission to increase healthy foods and physical activity in Northwest Arkansas. You may remember we had a story. I think Christina Thomas went to this summit that was held in late January.
Mm-hmm.
The grant proposals will be accepted through August 9th. You can learn more at the Endeavor Foundation website.
I'm afraid I'm not familiar with that group. Are you? The Endeavor Foundation?
Yes. Yes, I am. The Endeavor Foundation, it's difficult to explain, but they are sort of an umbrella foundation who helps award grant money to organizations trying to make Northwest Arkansas better. That's the nutshell.
Okay.
That's not their mission statement.
Well, sure, but sure.
Yeah.
Anybody that's going to give that much money in grants, I'm okay with.
Yes. Jill Kaplan, who is the sort of spokesperson for them, she may have a better way to describe what they do, but that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
Speaking of staying active, some baseball news.
Yes.
Incoming Arkansas freshman Andrew Benintendi has been named the National High School Player of the Year by the American Yeah, that's a big honor. American Baseball Coaches Association gave him that honor. He played his high school baseball at Madeira High School in Cincinnati. He's also been named the Gatorade Ohio Baseball Player of the Year. He finished his senior year of high school this spring with a .564 batting average, which was crazy. A dozen home runs, 57 RBI, 63 runs scored, 38 stolen bases.
Oh, wow.
Now, he was drafted in the 31st round of the 2013 Major League Baseball draft by the Cincinnati Reds. So for the Razorbacks to have him in uniform next year, they still have to hope that he doesn't sign with the Reds as a professional player.
So you still have the option? I thought
yes.
Once you were drafted, you did not. Or that's like for basketball, I guess.
Right. No. Yeah, because he's out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone can draft him. Any professional team can draft him if they want, but he doesn't have to sign.
Oh, okay.
And this is the
well, isn't there something with if you enter a draft, then you're done?
NBA and NFL.
Oh.
The Major League Baseball draft is somewhat different
because
they call it the amateur draft, which means you can draft anybody.
Oh, because you could be the Reds, but you could be sent to their double-A team or something.
Right.
Right.
Now, once you go into college, you're making the commitment that you will stay there a certain amount of time. You can then be drafted after your junior year.
Okay.
So it's kind of sometimes a tough decision for an 18-year-old kid to make.
It is. I remember I got to talk to Brett Eibner when he came to the University of Arkansas, and I think he had been drafted drafted.
No,
at least courted.
He had been drafted.
And I can't remember which team it was now, but he decided to go to college instead and finished out there with the Razorbacks, and he now plays for the Naturals.
Right. Hopefully we'll see him in Kauffman Stadium before long.
Absolutely.
With the Royals. But yeah, and it's an interesting term you use, courted, because that's kind of what the Major League Baseball draft is. It's, hey, we're showing interest in you.
Right.
But now, and there's a deadline sometime this summer. I can't remember the exact date. And if you haven't signed by then you will go. The fact that he was in the 31st round gives, I think, the Razorbacks a pretty good chance that he'll be in uniform.
Very cool.
Well, speaking of baseball.
And the Naturals.
Yes.
Which I mentioned. Our baseball park is the site of the 77th annual Texas League All-Star Game this evening.
You're going.
I'm going. Very excited. The gates open at 3, and there's some giveaways tonight. They've got hats and tickets, you know, to the first. Commemorative hats and things. I think there's about 2,500 for the hats and about 5,000 for the tickets. Batting practice starts at 3:15, so people can come early and watch all of that. There is an autograph session around 4:15 for the North Division in the home dugout. And that'll last about 15 minutes. And then at 5:15, the South Division will have an autograph session in the visitors' dugout. At 6 o'clock, the home run derby starts, which I'm really excited about. And then the game starts at 7:15, and there's a post-game fireworks spectacular at 9:30.
Home run derby and fireworks.
I'm really excited.
I can tell. And maybe a hot dog in your future?
Quite possibly.
Okay. KUAF is supported by the City of Eureka Springs, trademarked the Wedding Capital of the South, featuring a variety of wedding venues, caterers, and reception halls for the intimate event to the opulent. Information regarding wedding packages, tips, parties, and luncheons available at eurekasprings.org/weddings. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
July means it is time for the summer musical at local community theaters. Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale will begin its run of Thoroughly Modern Millie July 12th, and Rogers Little Theater will kick off its run of The King and I July 26th. If you're looking for some musical performances on stage in Eureka Springs, you may want to brush up on your Italian.
Se non dovesse ritornar più mai.
Madama Butterfly is one of three shows being produced by Opera of the Ozarks at Inspiration Point this year. The nonprofit organization began its 63rd season last Friday with a performance of Puccini's classic opera. Stage director Robert Swedberg is working on Madama Butterfly. It's his second year as stage director, though he says he also did some work with the organization in 1981. The simple open-air venue is located just yards off of Highway 62 in Eureka Springs. Last week, during a morning rehearsal, a portion of a pirate ship located just outside the rehearsal space sat in the shadow of an American flag and a black flag with a skull and crossbones waving overhead. The seafaring decor is likely a result of another production Opera in the Ozarks is staging this summer called The Pirates of Penzance. Every summer, students from around the country come and live on-site for about 2 months to work on these operas. Swedberg, who teaches at the University of Michigan during the school year, says each singer typically works on two, if not all three, productions. He says many of the world's renowned American singers have come through the program.
You have the opportunity to do several roles and to do at least four performances of each opera. Some of these, like this is a double cast opera, so the cast that we're rehearsing this morning, there's another cast that rehearsed last night, and each of those casts gets four performances. And that's pretty good for a young singer to be able to get the experience to do a major role with orchestra this many times. You know, unfortunately, there isn't the opportunity to do that at the universities as much, so it's really a good way to spread your wings and to learn the craft and to do it in a way and in a place where you're kind of protected. There isn't a lot of pressure here. We're really kind of nurturing, you know, and so it's a healthy environment for the singing actor to grow.
Paid musicians comprise an orchestra that plays live during performances. Swedberg says the musicians typically arrive at Inspiration Point a few weeks after the singers. While living on site for 2 months, Swedberg says young singers often have the ability to participate in other activities besides the opera themselves, such as yoga classes, master classes, stage combat classes, and even a seminar focusing on how to sharpen a resume and acquire management. Because participants share much of their daily lives with each other during the summer, Swedberg says they become very close.
It becomes like a big family. We get to know each other really well, and everybody participates in all activities here too. You'll see when we're through this rehearsal, this space will be power washed with this washer here, and some of the singers who have just been doing their roles will also participate in taking some of the props somewhere else for the next rehearsal. I think this afternoon we're rehearsing Elixir of Love over in the cafeteria, and then Pirates of Penzance has its dress rehearsal in here tonight. So it's a real three-ring circus changing from one to the other. and everybody participates.
Opera in the Ozarks at Inspiration Point is a unique training program affiliated with the National Federation of Music Clubs. Opera in the Ozarks also has a governing board whose president is an alumna of the program named Carol Langley. Langley grew up in a small town outside of Oklahoma City, and she now lives in St. Louis after spending time abroad as a professional singer.
Shortly after it was founded, when I was a student at Oklahoma City University, I entered a contest, and one of the prizes was to get to go to Inspiration Point. I hadn't heard of a place at that time, but I did go for the summer, and it was a fabulous experience. And even at that early time, it was a great growing and learning experience for a young singer. And after that, I sang with the Kansas City Lyric Opera for a while and then went on to Europe where I auditioned for some competitions and finally ended up with opera, the Opera Theater in Münster in Westfalen, Germany, and was there a while and eventually decided to come home and marry and changed my big interest to music in the church. But after that, I became interested in the National Federation of Music Clubs. And as a state president, I had to go back to our regional project, which is Opera in the Ozarks. And I discovered again what a great experience this is for a young singer. And thoroughly believe in the program that is there.
Although she only spent one summer there, Langley says it made a tremendous difference in her life and says when she went to Germany, people were amazed at the amount of performance opportunities she had had. Artistic director Thomas Cockrell says what makes Opera in the Ozarks unique is its ability to provide a bridge to the professional world for participants.
We have a unique niche as being an important bridge between the conservatory training and students' entrance into young artist programs that are sponsored by major opera companies. You know, after a summer here where someone has done a couple roles and has, coached with our artistic staff, they're in much better place to apply for, these very coveted one-year apprenticeships or summer apprenticeships with major opera companies. And I think we're well positioned to be that feeder system.
Cockrell, who works at the University of Arizona, spends much of his year preparing for working with the opera organization in the summer. He begins in the fall with publicity for the program before traveling to cities across the country to hear about 300 singers audition. To create this year's company, he selected 42 singers who pay to participate in the program, though many attend on scholarship. Cockrell's other duties include putting a staff together and recruiting an orchestra. He says opera is a growing art form, and one of the reasons is because of the recent use of supertitles. During performances, the English translation of singers' dialogue is projected onto a screen. Cockrell says this practice has become more common in the last 20 years, and it's much more inviting to audiences. Cockrell says opera often conjures up stereotypical images of large sopranos wearing horned hats and holding spears, but there's more to it than that, and opera is an art form that people should give a try.
I think it's just always good to experiment. I think it's good to try new things. The music can speak to the heart and the emotions in a way that's mysterious. I think that's why a lot of us are attracted to music. You put that with a great drama, you marry the music and the story and the plot and the poetry involved with opera, and there's a really unique and potent connection that can really sort of take hold of you. Lots of people get bitten by the opera bug and maybe not knowing why, but they're for life.
Opera in the Ozarks at Inspiration Point will continue its 63rd season through July 19th. The company will produce three operas in rotation. These productions are Madama Butterfly, The Elixir of Love, and The Pirates of Penzance. Sunday afternoon performances are scheduled at Arend Art Center in Bentonville, and shorter performances of Cinderella will be performed Saturday afternoons at the auditorium in Eureka Springs. For tickets and more information, you can visit opera.org.
Mascolitate!
And if a little music with your live theater isn't quite your thing, there is another option for you. Fort Smith Little Theater will have 2 weekends worth of performances of Emma, which is based on the Jane Austen novel, beginning on July 18th. If you know some children who would like to be on stage, Arts Life Theater will have auditions for The Neverending Story July 20th. For more information on theater in our region, you can visit our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
Mensa, the organization widely known for people of high intelligence, recently ranked the Arkansas Museum of Discovery in Little Rock as one of the top 10 science museums in the United States. Soon, Northwest Arkansas will have a hands-on science museum of its own. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more.
Just more than a week and a half ago, plans to open the Amazium were announced. The museum, to be located near the entrance to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville, is set to open sometime in 2015. Sam Dean is the executive director of the museum.
We are in the middle of our schematic design of our exhibits, so we have some good ideas of what the experiential framework will look like between the exhibits themselves, between our program spaces, you know, our areas for deeper learning, learning loft area for deeper dives with teachers and corporate teams that want to come and spend some more time around creativity and innovation. So we've created the framework, and right now we're in the plans to sort of fill those out and get the specifics behind them.
Memphis-based Haze Lip Studios is the design studio contracted for the museum project. Locally, the firm is working with the Rogers Historical Museum on the creation of 2 new exhibits. But Dean says that Haze Lip is also well-known across the museum world.
First of all, they're a full-service firm, so they do both exhibition design as well as architecture. And there's a beauty there that you're able to play off the design of the building, is able to inform the design of the exhibits and back and forth. Second of all, they're also well-known for diving deeper into community. And instead of producing things that could appear anywhere on the planet, they're able to work with a community to develop a building and an exhibitions package that's really tailor-made for that community.
Dean says that the studio's plan for this museum is no different. While an acre of outdoor space will be incorporated into the design of exhibits and the museum itself, he says that the outdoors will also be incorporated into the interior of the museum, with a climbable tree canopy as well as other design elements.
The building itself, one of the things we're excited about is the inclusion of some primary building panels, but also lots of glass and natural wood, perhaps some reclaimed wood and some other things. That the idea that with our location and with both the location for the building and then the community of Northwest Arkansas, the idea of natural materials and things that lend themselves to thinking and nodding to the outdoor environment is important. So instead of having sort of this playful, whimsical architecture, we think it's really sort of elegant and sort of honoring the sort of the sanctity of sort of the play and the kind of learning that happens in there.
In addition to working with Haze Lip Studios for the architecture and much of the exhibit design work, Dean says that museum officials are also working with the creative team from Nickelodeon, one of the corporate partners of the museum, to design an exhibition gallery, which he says will be focused around the ideas of whimsy and play, but will also deal with scientific tenets as well.
If you think about playing with some of the primal elements like light, color, and sound, so you might see things like, can you freeze your shadow along a wall? And what would a shadow look like if you could freeze it? You might have, you know, tubes running into a wall and coming out another wall, so you could talk to people distally across the gallery, kind of like that cups game, right, with a string that runs in between. But in this case, they might lead anywhere. You wouldn't know. This idea of sort of whimsy and play is important, and I think with a lot of the primal elements, sound, light, color, etc.
And although science is always changing, Dean says that he's not worried about the exhibits or their content becoming dated, as the museum will be less about giving visitors a snapshot of the field of science at any given time, and more about encouraging them to be inquisitive.
Now, I have a science background, and really where I got started in science was not learning about the periodic table, which is important to know eventually, but it was really getting excited about asking good questions, learning to pick frogs up along the water. It was learning to do things that got me excited about science. And that sort of scaffolded me to continue on in that area. So whereas the museum will have opportunities to talk about current topics in culture and science and whatnot, it's really about having your own personal experience, your own personal dialogue with the materials and the kinds of professionals in the community that can help get you excited and thinking about, hey, this might be for me.
The Amazium's opening is more than a year away. During the announcement that introduced the museum and Dean to the Northwest Arkansas public, museum officials announced that they had already raised $20 million for the project. But with a fundraising goal of $23.5 million, much remains to be done before that opening can take place. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
And this is Ozarks at Large. So, Kyle, I found this interesting thing this morning that I can't believe I missed this. The 90th anniversary year of Dexter Gordon's birth is this year.
Mm-hmm. Dexter Gordon, who played in Northwest Arkansas not that long ago.
Musician. So to honor that, his wife, Maxine Gordon, is in town, and she'll be speaking at the Rogers Public Library this evening. It's part of the Black Music Month celebration speaker series, Conversations with Music Masters.
No shortage of music and music-related events in this region in the summer.
No.
I mean, the library just got done with their series, the library at Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. Sunday night, you and I both attended Old Crow Medicine Show at the Amp, mm-hmm. which I thought was a fun, energetic show.
It was fun. I love outdoor concerts.
Yeah.
I especially love, like, you just have, like, a blanket or something or chairs, and you just sit. And it's, like, so – it's just so relaxing and so comfortable.
Well, and it helped that Sunday night was mm-hmm. a very pleasant night.
It was such
a nice breeze
night.
Blowing in over the Amp. Mm-hmm. The super
and then the
moon.
Supermoon was gorgeous. It was just a really good night.
Three Penny Acre opened for that. It was a great night, mm-hmm. well attended, and a good time.
And I mentioned yesterday that the Amp has added another show. Vampire Weekend will be playing there September 25th, but tickets go on sale at 9 a.m. on Friday.
Sky Fiera opening, by the way. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty good get.
I'm excited.
So it's September 25th, and tickets go on sale
9 o'clock Friday morning.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Friday morning.
Mm-hmm. And tickets begin at $36.50 in advance. If you wait all the way till September, if you get a last minute,
sure.
then it's $40.
Right. And you had a lot of music in your evening last night.
Yes. Artists for Your Festival Orchestra in the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. First time they've had a huge classical music concert.
Because it was a full orchestra.
Yes, it was. Now, it wasn't all 82 members
no,
of the artist.
No, but
it was a full orchestra.
Right.
Because, as Katie Hendrickson told me last night during our live broadcast, Mozart, at the time of his composition, wouldn't have composed for, there was no need for all 82.
But right.
There was still dozens of musicians inside that room with about 150.
It sounded like fun. I didn't go, but I did get to listen to you guys since we were broadcasting, which was really cool.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. Heaps of work done beforehand mm-hmm. by the Crystal Bridges, Walton Arts Center, and Artisphere people that mm-hmm. made it an easy broadcast to do.
So thanks to everyone for working together. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. There has been talk in the building this morning of when this will be rebroadcast, because a lot of people who were there said, oh, I want to hear it now on the radio.
Oh.
So I don't know when that will happen, but stay tuned.
We'll let you know.
Yes. Now, if you didn't go and you missed the live broadcast or just want to hear a bit of it again.
We have a little bit now.
Yes. This was the opener, the Overture to the Marriage of Figaro. This is the Artisphere Festival Orchestra last night at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. the Artosphere Festival Orchestra last night in the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. It was broadcast live on KUAF. We will be rebroadcasting that, I think, at some time. And the 15th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes American bebop and jazz pianist and composer and singer Bob Doro to Walton Arts Center Star Theater Saturday, July 13th. Doro has worked with Miles Davis and Allen Ginsberg and is the voice and composer of songs used in Schoolhouse Rock. Tickets and more information at KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Bentonville.
All right. It's good to be back.
You've had a really busy week.
Yes, a really busy month, really.
Well, I mean, yes. Since you've been back, yeah. And we really haven't gotten to talk about it that much. I'm going to take a second to ask you, you spent 2 weeks in Iceland? Or
One
not
week.
Quite 2 weeks. You spent
a little over a week, I think.
A little over
yeah.
a week. How was it?
Well, you know how when you really want to do something for a long time, mm-hmm. then there's that fear like, oh.
It's not going to live up to the expectation.
Blew the expectations out of the water.
Good.
Out of the water.
I don't really want to ask you your favorite moment because I suppose you don't have one or you can't quite find one. You know, it's one of those questions that somebody
move.
Asks you and they,
yes.
yeah. I mean, can you tell me, I don't know, a couple, maybe some highlights?
The Glacial Lagoon, which is where icebergs from a glacier break off into this glacier-fed lake that's being created, uh-huh. then turns into a river, and then flows into the angry North Atlantic Ocean. And if you go
angry?
To the, well, it's pretty angry up there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know, the waves are
sure.
rolling high. And if you go to the beach when tide is out, there are all these icebergs that have just been kind of left on this beach, and the beach is black because it's volcanic rock.
Oh,
and
wow.
so you had this juxtaposition of this roaring ocean coming in, these icebergs that are all different shades of blue, and then this black sand, this black rock.
I don't know much about Iceland, but from what I've seen, it seems like it's very visual. Like it's
yes.
something that you like. You don't quite. It looks fake because it's so.
It looks like a soundstage. It looks like a green screen
because it's just very
otherworldly,
unique.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, if you ever want to be bored by more,
yes,
just ask.
I know where to find you.
Yes. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks for listening.